Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the October 16th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola School Board. Lindsay highlights homecoming successes by Ben Crane. Principal Nick Lindsay reported to the Arcola School Board that homecoming week was a success for the junior-senior high school at the regular board meeting on Wednesday. He gave a shout-out to teachers Daniela Coombe and Robert Boyd, as well as students and class sponsors for putting together a week with which newly featured a Powerpuff game bonfire on Wednesday of homecoming week. He also said that Terry Miller night went well, as the high school presented Miller with a vintage Letterman jacket along with other guests, notably representatives from the University of Illinois and the Arizona, formerly St. Louis, Cardinals. Lindsay wrapped up his report with news on new DARE training from student resource officer Brandy Smith, who recently completed her training to instruct the material. She'll be teaching in the second semester over a 10-week period, focusing on 5th and 7th grade classrooms with one lesson a week. Elementary principal Amber Behrens reported that they celebrated 5 students of the month nominated by their teachers. In the month of October, the focus is respect amongst students. Students will be rewarded with writer bucks as a reward for being respectful. Behrens also reported that the elementary school will be celebrating their first quarter with a trip to Aikman Wildlife Adventure, and students are looking forward to the walkthrough, feeding and petting animals, and going to the museum. Among the business items on the agenda, the board approved an authorization on an interfund transfer, which simply means they're transferring funds from one account to another to pay the annual debt certificates. The board also approved 3 health insurance plans that will be offered to employees at the turn of the year, as well as a second reading for the board policies from the June and August 2024 press packet and a community-based Special Olympics program and job description. Finally, the board approved the resignation of Jamie Ferguson as junior high basketball cheerleading head coach, as well as the employment of Kevin Garza as junior high boys basketball assistant coach. Ben Crane is junior high boys volunteer assistant basketball coach, and Jamie Ferguson is high school basketball cheerleading head coach. To end the meeting, the board approved the unpaid leave of Amy Kaufman and Jamie Attaway. The Arthur Village Board. School chief makes case for $29.6 million in upgrades by Ariana Cherry. Superintendent Shannon Cheek addressed the Arthur Village Board regarding the school district's referendum on the November 5th ballot. He presented a blueprint of the proposed additions to the high school, emphasizing the need for more space for agricultural and industrial technology programs and a larger cafeteria. Cheek noted that all of those areas are too small for its students. We can only have so many students in these classes, and we have waiting lists for them. Our cafeteria is too small, and we often have students eating down the hall in front of my office, he said. Not only will the new cafeteria be a lunch space, it will also be a general space that can be used throughout the day, Cheek said. Additionally, he highlighted the inclusion of a new elevator to improve accessibility for students with disabilities. While there's a chairlift currently, it takes about 10 minutes for it to get from the bottom floor to the top, and also, when it's in use, the stairs are unable to be used. The chairlift has been continuously breaking down. The total cost of the project is estimated at $29.6 million, with the district committing $5.6 million in tax dollars. In other business, the board approved expenditures totaling $383,000, including the annual audit expense. CPA firm McGuire, Juhas, Huffman, and Buckley auditors report was postponed into a later meeting. Village President Ron Randall reported that the roofs on the hitch racks were nearing completion. Trustee Matt Bernius announced an upcoming pork chop dinner hosted by FFLA alumni on Friday night before the football game. Newly sworn in Chief Elliot Tinnen informed the board about increased traffic stops, misdemeanors, and medical assistance transportation. During new business, the board discussed and approved street closing by People's Bank and Trust on Thursday, October 24th for their customer appreciation activities without traffic interference. A TIF construction grant was requested for 206 South Vine Street in the amount of $2,000. One of the display windows was damaged during the construction and needs repaired. An insurance claim was also filed, and the TIF grant will be approved only if the insurance claim is denied. Ordinance declaring the 2018 Ford Carryall Police Department vehicle as surplus property and authorizing the chief of police to dispose of the same with or without public notice was passed. This vehicle has been the old canine car and had several issues. Ordinance declaring the 2006 Ford F-250 Super Duty Carryall Street Department vehicle as surplus property and authorizing the public works supervisor, Grant Corum, to dispose of the same, with or without public notice. Corum noted the department would be selling the vehicle. approved hiring a temporary crossing guard at the high school due to Bobby Stoltzman's upcoming surgery at the rate of $15 per hour. A list of substitutes will be in the works for future use when current guards are unable to fulfill their duties. Newman City Council approves purchase of a new squad car by Ben Crane. The Newman City Council approved the purchase of a new squad car on Monday for $58,000 from Terry Ford's in Piatone. The car will be outfitted with lights, equipment, and other modifications. The old squad car will be kept by the city for part-time officers and other needs. Police Chief Dixie Brazelton also reported that their downtown war memorial has been defaced, but the suspect was arrested and is now facing a trial. Other items discussed during the meeting include the ongoing water tower project, where the tower has been shut off since August 12th for upgrades. The city is currently looking to install cathodic protection, which helps with rust. This is the last of the upgrades before the winter tower is turned on and samples are sent to the Environmental Protection Agency. The tower should be back to full function within a couple of weeks. Newman was awarded the Rebuild Illinois grant from Illinois Senators Chapin Rose, which amounted to $75,000. Before the city can claim the funds, they must file paperwork explaining what they intend to use them for. After lengthy deliberation, the council decided on a diesel generator for the old school, which is estimated to cost $45,000, and new flooring for the gym in the old school estimated to cost $43,000. The council also set their trick-or-treating date for October 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. Post-prom for Shiloh will be at the old school gym, where students will decorate on April 25th and celebrate the following day. Shiloh students will also be doing community service in the building on Friday for about 2 hours, cleaning the windows. Finally, the council approved the purchase of 4 8-foot tables and 32 chairs for the community building in the amount of $2,000 and a fee waiver to assist students for the opening of Medicare. The next first page story, Douglas County Animal Shelter Administrator suspended by Ben Crane. Spencer Hall of the Douglas County Animal Shelter has been suspended indefinitely with pay by Douglas County's Animal Control Committee. Chairman Tom Hettinger had no comment for the Chronicle as to how long Hall's suspension is or whether her job is in jeopardy. However, he confirmed that there would be a special meeting to review her suspension. Her suspension comes after an ongoing dog abuse lawsuit regarding 11 of the dogs at the animal shelter, where Judge Kate Watson handed down a temporary ruling granting the owner, Luther Clark, permission to retrieve 4 of them. On October 3rd, the County Chronicle witnessed Douglas County Sheriff Nathan Chaplin, another deputy, and Clark arrive at the animal shelter to relieve 4 of the 11 dogs at the shelter. Hall was observed to be non-compliant with officers, refusing to open the gate for the law enforcement. "You need a warrant," Hall exclaimed multiple times. The county sheriff's office does not need a warrant to enter the building. It's owned and operated by the county government, and the sheriff's office was enforcing a court order. After back and forth, the 4 dogs were released back to their original owner. Court records show that Clark was charged in July with 2 misdemeanor counts of animal cruelty for failure to provide animal owner duties, which were dismissed September 13th. The next article, Kistler's Honored for Life of Leadership with Explorer Scouts in Arthur by Marty Yackel. Wally and Jean Kistler spent many years leading the Explorer Scouts in Arthur. Recently, a group of those former explorers decided to honor the couple with a memorial at Eberhard Park. With donation from those Explorer Scouts and local businesses, a commemorative benches and a rock with a plaque and picture of a Colorado trip taken in 1978 were placed at Eberhard Park. The memorial can be found under the trees just east of the main pavilion at the park. The plaque reads, "A Life of Service, Wally and Jean demonstrated a lifelong compassion for the Arthur community youth. We, the benefactors of your love and commitment, want to acknowledge the life-changing impact you had on our lives. Our Explorer Scout experiences live on. May we be so inspired as to pass it forward. With love and appreciation, we dedicate this bench to your life of service." These words from Scott Hirschberger summed up what so many of them feel about Wally and Jean. "I won't be able to make Wally and Jean's dedication. Please tell them from me that I can't begin to tell you the million fond memories I have of you two beautiful souls. You adopted so many of us kids throughout the years as Explorer Scouts. You made sure we worked for our trips, not just handed them to us. How many remember the cold nights selling Christmas trees or getting up early to go collect newspapers? The fun meetings and projects, the amazing trips. Whether we went snow skiing or hung out in a beachside campground in Florida. Because of your dedication to helping youth, I have always tried to help kids along the way in my life, whether it was teaching my own boys to camp or helping others that maybe didn't have the same opportunities as a Boy Scout leader. Myself, I've always told my boys, Make sure there are at least 5 people in your world that will say you made a positive difference in their lives. I hope today, with the people around you and the hundreds of us who couldn't make it, that you're aware of how many people's lives you have touched and blessed. You have for sure made positive impact on all of our loves. Love you guys. Wally and Jean recently celebrated their 75th wedding anniversary. We'll move now to the obituaries. Sarah Ellen Sally Dowd, 86 of Tuscola, passed away at 4:52 p.m. Wednesday, October 9th, 2024, at the Tuscola Health Care Center in Tuscola. A visitation will be held on Friday, October 18th, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola, from 4 to 7 p.m., with the time of sharing memories by family and friends at 7 p.m. Celebration of Life Open House will be held at the Tuscola Moose Lodge starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday, October 19th. Linda L. Phillips, 84 of Sullivan, passed away at 4:20 p.m. Thursday, October 10th, 2024 at Sullivan Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center. Graveside services were held Monday, October 14th in Greenhill Cemetery, Sullivan. Visitation was Monday morning in the Reed Funeral Home, Sullivan. Memorials are suggested to the Sullivan Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center Activity Fund. Nelson S. Kaufman, 80, of Humboldt, passed away peacefully at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, October 9, 2024, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, surrounded by his family. Funeral services were held Sunday, October 13th, at the HCK West Building, Rural Arthur. Bishop Lamar Miller officiated. Burial followed in the Yoder Cemetery. Visitation was held Friday, October 11th, and Saturday, October 12th, all at the HCK West Building. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. The next article, Billingsley reflects on Woolly Worm Fest. Kevin Billingsley was named Grand Marshal of Camargo's Woolly Worm Festival held October 4th through 5th. The following is gleaned from his acceptance speech. Jackie and I are honored to have been chosen as Grand Marshals for the festival. Kevin and Jackie set up their home in Camargo after marrying in 1998. Jackie was born and raised in Urbana, while Kevin is a lifelong resident of the village. Jackie currently works as a research project coordinator at the University of Illinois and has worked for over 35 years in fields of social service and early childhood education. I'm happy to say Jackie is also a cancer survivor. Kevin is a former program manager for the Hazardous Waste Training Program at the University of Illinois. Prior to retirement, Kevin worked as a special needs aide for the Villa Grove School District. Kevin has served as trustee on the Camargo Village Board and as village president. Kevin is proud to have organized a Day in the Park event that upgraded the park playground equipment and installed safe surface, soft surface in the play areas. Kevin initiated the Verizon cell tower installation, as well as having brought the Head Start program to Camargo's community building. Kevin's parents, Jim and Charlotte Billingsley, set up housekeeping in Camargo in 1954. Their generation is known as the Greatest Generation. They were hardworking, humble people who grew up during the Depression and served during World War II and were proud to have kids that graduated from a university. Kevin's dad was a former village president and, to Kevin's knowledge, is the only president to win an election by one vote as a write-in candidate. Kevin said many people have contributed to the village in various ways over the years. As you look around the festival, you see a beautiful park that has evolved through time. We currently have a fine main stage with a newly constructed pavilion that's ideal for the festival. The Ball Diamond has been revived courtesy of the Camargo Champs 4-H, and it now hosts Little League games. Our community's building is initially totally remodeled with assistance of the Head Start funding. Many trees and benches have been given by family members as memorials to those who have passed, thus giving thanks to the Killian, Dyke, Bretz, Thompson, Kirkman, Van Deventer, Hardaway, and Siegler families for their thoughtful donations. We must also acknowledge our village board for allocating our taxpayer dollars in a responsible manner. Trustees Jim Hardaway, Jim Langford, Nancy George, Jean Braylard, Wade Lorenz, Gary Gilpin worked diligently to put our tax dollars to good use. We must also need to recognize the work of our treasurer, Shirley Badman, navigating through numbers for many years, and our clerk, Celissa Dan, working daily, keeping papers straight and putting things together, a great village newspaper. We also recognize our public works supervisor, Kyle Raymer, who ensures our water systems, streets maintained. He is widely known as the pothole annihilator. His dad, Doug, has worked many tireless years for our village. Our building inspector, Tim Wigan, assures construction within the village is level and true, aka the enforcer. Also want to recognize the hardest working mayor in Douglas County. Kevin said, this is a day of thankfulness commemorated by this festival. The festival committee has worked many long hours to make this 10th festival happen. I want to recognize Bart and Salisa Dan, Nancy George, Jean Brayland, Wade Lorenz, Tanya Kern, J.C. Crawford, Billy Bloomsfield, and Pam Siegler for their tireless efforts in putting together this festival. Now the festival can begin. To the harbinger of fall, the woolly worm. TCHS to premiere Murder Most Foul this weekend by Ben Crane. Johanna Steffens, the drama club director at Tuscola Community High School, is gearing up for the production of the school's latest production, a play within a play that promises to be anything but ordinary. It will be the first production in the school's new theater. It's a murder mystery play by some bad actors, Stefan explained. Act 1 is a rehearsal, Act 2 is the dress rehearsal, and Act 3 is opening night. It's essentially what would happen if you didn't rehearse very often and had really bad actors. The play, entitled Murder Most Foul, follows a local community theater as they struggle to put on production, with the playwright constantly changing the script and the director trying to wrangle her untalented staff. The playwright is friends with the director, and she keeps changing things, Stefan said. They can never get anything right because every rehearsal keeps changing. The actors aren't very good, and the tech director is awful and keeps playing the wrong sound effects at the wrong time. It's just funny that way. Adding to the chaos, Steffens is allowing her high school actors to embrace their inner thespian flaws, encouraging them to use accents even if they're not quite up to par. I've always been taught that unless you can do it perfectly, you shouldn't do accents, Steffens said. But this play, I'm letting them do the accents because when they're in character within the play, some of their accents are actually bad, and it works for the show. The production marks the first time the high school will be using their new auditorium, Stage 301, and Steffens is excited about the opportunities the space provides, even if some technical aspects are still being ironed out. It's so nice just turning the lights off and leaving because I'm used to tearing down all the cords in the card table, Steffens said. Murder Most Foul premieres at 7 p.m. Saturday, with doors opening at 30 minutes prior, with Sunday's production at 6:30 p.m. Douglas County gets flat tentative multiplier for 2024. Douglas County has been issued a tentative property assessment equalization factor of 1.000, according to David Harris, director of the Illinois Department of Revenue, IDOR. The property assessment equalizer factor is often called the multiplier, is the method used to achieve uniform property assessment among the counties, as required by law. This equalizer is particularly important because some of the state's 6,000 local taxing districts overlap with two or more counties, e.g. school districts, junior college districts, fire protection districts. If there was no equalization among the counties, substantial inequities among taxpayers with comparable properties would result. State law requires property in Illinois to be assessed at one-third of its market value. Farm property is assessed differently, with farm home sites and dwellings subject to regular assessing and equalization procedures. Farm land and farm buildings are assessed according to standards based on productivity. The equalization factor is determined annually for each county by comparing the sales price of individual properties sold over the past 3 years to the assessed value placed on those properties by the county supervisor of assessments, the county assessor. If the three-year average level of assessment is one-third of the market value, the equalization factor will be 1. If the average level of assessment is greater than one-third of market value, the equalization factor will be less than 1. And if the average level of assessment is less than one-third of market value, the equalization factor will be greater than 1. Assessments in Douglas County are 33.63% of market value based on sales properties in 2021, 22, and 23. The equalization factor currently being assigned is for taxes 2024, payable in 2025. Last year's equalization factor for the county was 1.02. The tentative factor is subject to change if the county board of review takes action which significantly affects the county assessments, or 2, if local officials or others can present data showing that IDOR's estimates of the average level of assessment in the county should be adjusted. A public hearing on the tentative multiplier will be held between 20 and 30 days after the tentative factor is published in a newspaper of general circulation within the county. A change in the equalization factor does not mean property tax bills will increase or decrease. The tax bills are determined by local taxing bodies when they request money each year to provide services to their local citizens. If the amount requested by local taxing districts is not greater than the amount received in the previous year, then total property taxes will not increase, even if the assessments may have increased. The assessed value of an individual property determines what portion of the tax burden the specific taxpayer will assume. That individual's portion of the tax responsibility is not changed by the multiplier. Dine with the Doc, October 24th in Tuscola. The next Dine with the Doc program is Thursday, October 24th at Tuscola First Christian Church, 100 Church Street, Tuscola, facing the Egyptian Trail. Dine with the Doc is every fourth Thursday of the month, except November, December, when it's on the third Thursday. Dine with the Doc is a free program that welcomes local senior public getting to hear an educational topic while enjoying a complimentary lunch. No need to bring any money, just bring a questioning mind, an appetite, and perhaps a friend. This month's speaker is Karen Morton, RD, CDE, from Sarah Bush Lincoln in Mattoon. Morton is a registered dietitian, certified diabetes educator. She'll be on hand to focus on the topic of diabetes, often referred to by doctors as diabetes mellitus, which is a chronic condition which can damage many organs of the body if not controlled. Approximately 28.7 million people in the United States have diabetes. At least 96 million Americans have prediabetes, more than one in three. Prediabetes raises a person's risk of developing type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. Come learn more about diabetes and how it's diagnosed, signs and symptoms to look out for treatment options, and more. A question-answer period will follow her discussion. Operation Christmas Child Drop-Off begins November 18th, Arcola, Illinois, October 14th, 2024. Volunteers are preparing to collect Operation Christmas Child shoebox gifts during November Collection Week, November 18th through the 25th. More than 4,700 drop-off locations will be open across the country in November, and shoebox packers can find their local drop-off locations near them. Since 1993, Operation Christmas Child has been collecting and delivering gift-filled shoeboxes to children, including many who are suffering from war, poverty, disease, and disaster. Operation Christmas Child hopes to reach another 12 million children in 2024 with the hope of Jesus. Shoebox packing is fun for individuals, families, and groups. Find a step-by-step guide on the How to Pack a Shoebox webpage. The project partners with local churches across the globe to deliver these tangible expressions of God's love to children in need. Participants can donate online through Follow Your Box and receive a tracking label to discover its destination. Children need hope, and they need to know that they are not alone and that God loves them, said Franklin Graham, president of the Samaritan's Purse. Gift-filled shoeboxes open the door for us to share the hope of the gospel with boys and girls around the world. Please pray that these simple gifts have an eternal impact. Participants can find the nearest drop-off location and hours of operation as they make plans to drop off their shoebox gifts. The online lookup tool is searchable by city or zip code. Sign in each location will identify the drop-off. Operation Christmas Child, a project of Samaritan Purse, seeks to demonstrate God's love in a tangible way to children in need around the world and together with a local church worldwide to share the good news of Jesus Christ. Since 1993, Operation Christmas Child has collected and delivered more than 220 million gift-filled shoeboxes to children in more than 170 countries and territories. Local drop-off is November 18th through the 25th at the Arthur Southern Baptist Church, 503 North Vine Street, Arthur. Prior to November 24th, the drop-off times are 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. November 14th, drop-off is 1 to 4 p.m. November 25th is 7 to 9 a.m. Arthur's Marty Yackel named Volunteer of the Quarter. As a community bank, People's Bank and Trust recognizes the value of volunteerism in our communities. To recognize, commend, and promote the volunteerism, People's Bank and Trust has established a program to recognize an outstanding community member for their volunteer efforts of improvement to our community. Marty Yackel has been chosen as the current Arthur Volunteer of the Quarter for her many years of volunteer work in the Arthur community. Marty volunteers in many different organizations, including District 305 Education Foundation. The Education Foundation was established in 1998 as a tax-exempt corporation. The District 305 is governed by a volunteer board of directors who are dedicated to educational excellence for this community's children. The foundation's board of directors operates independently of the Arthur School District Number 305 and is responsible for the financial arrangement of the foundation funds. The mission of CUSD No. 305 Education Foundation is to acquire and distribute resources for the schools in the communities of Arthur, Atwood Hammond, and Lovington in order to enrich learning opportunities for students, staff, and communities. The foundation strives to achieve its mission through direct support for student development, staff excellence, and creativity and greater school-community partnerships. Marty's also involved in the Arthur Women's Club, volunteers at the Arthur Welcome Center, served as the Arthur Public Library Board, sings in the Arthur Methodist Church Choir, and helps out at the Great Pumpkin Patch in the fall. In honor of the Marty Yackel's many years of volunteer service, People's Bank has made a monetary donation to the District 305 Education Foundation, and a plaque with her name will be placed on display at the bank. People's Bank and Trust is an independent community bank with 13 offices located in Pena, Taylorville, Altamont, Tower Hill, Charleston, Waverly, Morrisonville, Palmyra, Whitehall, Springfield, Arcola, Arthur, and Tuscola. People's is a full-service bank offering outstanding community service to consumers, a small business, and farmers in Central Illinois. People First Bank Shares Incorporated, with corporate offices in Pena, Illinois, is a lending company and holding company for People's Bank and Trust. Another article, Arcola's new school resource officer aims to build trust and improve safety, by Ben Crane. When Brandy Smith first stepped into her new role as the school resource officer, SRO, for the Arcola School District, she knew she had her work cut out for her. As the district's first ever SRO, Smith faced the challenge not only of establishing her presence, but also breaking down any preconceived notions students and staff might have about law enforcement. In the beginning, I think a lot of students thought I would come in and just lay down the law, Smith said, but I've really worked to show them that I came here as a friendly face they can come to, not just someone here to discipline them. That approach seems to be paying off. Smith has made it a priority to actively engage with students, whether it's walking the halls, joining them for lunch, or participating in the school's DARE program. Her efforts have helped foster a sense of trust and approachability that many students may not have experienced but with a new law enforcement before. I try to get out there and communicate with a lot of the kids, especially the younger ones, Smith explained. You can tell some of them have been told that police are bad or they're just out there to arrest people. I want them to see that that's not the case. Smith's role extends far beyond simply maintaining order on campus. She's also a key member of the school's threat assessment team, working closely with administration to ensure the safety and security of the entire school community. My mind is always thinking about different scenarios and how I would react, Smith said. I worry about the kids when they're outside playing, and I'm constantly aware of the need to be prepared for an active shooter situation or other emergencies. It's a sobering reality that Smith acknowledges, but one she's determined to address head-on. She's currently working to become an ALICE, Alert Lockdown Informed Safety Counter-Evacuate instructor, a specialized training program that will equip her as the school's administrator with the tools to respond effectively to such crises. Smith's proactive approach extends to other areas of the school as well. She's been working to address issues like truancy and reckless driving in the school parking lot, improving reward system to encourage positive behavior. I've been trying to do some things to get the kids excited about coming to school and following the rules, Smith said. We're looking to do a drawing every quarter or midterm when the kids who have been here consistently can win prizes or have lunch with me or the principal. As for the parking lot, Smith has been actively monitoring the area and plans to implement a system where she can recognize and reward students who demonstrate safe driving habits. It's crazy out there with kids coming, backing out and cutting each other off, Smith said. I've told them that if I have to do, I'll start handing out citations, but I'd much rather find a way to encourage them to slow down and be more aware. Smith's dedication to creating a safe and supportive environment for the students has not gone unnoticed. While there were some initial concerns from community members about the need for an SRO, Smith has worked tirelessly to address these misconceptions. I think people just need to be more accepting and happy that a school is wanting to have extra protection, Smith said. It's no different than having a police department on a college campus. It's about keeping our kids safe. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.